Hello and welcome to Power Play for this Friday, January 22nd. I'm Joyce Napier. Coming up on the show, Canada needs a new Governor General. The job is open.
The vetting process that was in place was followed, but obviously we're going to also look at ways we can strengthen and improve the vetting process for high-level appointments.
Julie Payette is out as Governor General. How did she get the job in the first place, and how will the government replace her? Should the opposition get a say in moments, we'll bring in Intergovernmental Affairs Minister Dominique Leblanc, then NDP leader Jagmeet Singh, and Conservative House leader Gérard Deltel. Then vaccine shipments stall.
We're working around the clock to get as many vaccines as we can, as fast as we can. It's what I'm thinking about when I wake up in the morning, when I go to bed, and every hour in between.
As new, more dangerous COVID variants continue to spread, Canada braces for a full week with no new vaccine shipments. Is it time for a new plan of attack? CTV News infectious disease specialist Dr. Abdou Sherkawi joins the show. And Alberta Premier Jason Kenney says he's fighting a trade war with the United States, and they started it. Prime Minister Justin Trudeau is speaking with President Joe Biden this hour. Will he even bring up Kenney's call to impose sanctions on the new American administration? We'll break that all down with our strategy session. This is Power Play. Let's get to the players. The fallout from Julie Payette's resignation at Governor General continues. Her unprecedented departure leaves behind a trail of unanswered questions while we wait to learn more about the damaging report that ended her tenure. Canada's Chief Justice, Richard Wagner, is stepping into the role until a former replacement is recommended to the Queen. Will the selection process be different than the one that ultimately appointed Madame Payette? How long will it take? And Minister Dominique Leblanc joins us from Moncton. Hello, Minister. Nice to see you. As usually, happy Friday. Let me get right to this independent report. Now, we know it has cost almost, what, $400,000. I imagine it lays out what was happening at Rideau Hall, the abuse, the bullying. So when are we going to see this report? And when we do, will many parts be blacked out, or will we have the full picture of what actually happened at Rideau Hall for over 3 years? I think, you know, maybe the Canadian people do have a right to know.
Yeah, the Canadian people have a right to be concerned, as was the government, about that workplace. And the Governor General's decision yesterday to resign was the best one in terms of renewing a healthy and respectful workplace. In terms of releasing the report, Joyce, the Federal Privacy Act applies in terms of the confidential interviews that dozens and dozens of employees and some former employees gave to the independent third-party reviewer that prepared the report. So we will be releasing, I hope, within the next few days, as quickly as we can, the version of the report that can be released after the Justice Department lawyers look at the application of the Privacy Act. I mean, these people spoke to the reviewer, to the experts that did the review, with an expectation of confidentiality. And so the report will be made public insofar as the government can, while respecting the privacy rights of these employees. And we hope to do so very quickly.
Were there any recommendations in that report, or was it just, you know, here is what the people are saying?
Both. There were sort of findings in terms of the workplace, what the people who had asked to be interviewed by Quintet, the experts that did this review for the Privy Council office, their stories were similar. The people who were interviewed told similar, compelling examples of a workplace that was very troublesome. The reviewer, the experts that conducted the review, said that it was urgent for the Privy Council office to act, which I think the resignation of the Governor General yesterday allows the Privy Council office to work directly with the employees that are there now to renew the leadership at Rideau Hall. So that's exactly what we're going to do.
Okay, so in her statement yesterday, she said, and I'm quoting, "We all experience things differently, but we should all strive to do better." She doesn't sound like, you know, So it's not like she absorbed how her behavior has affected the staff at Rideau Hall. Experience things differently is sort of like a blanket excuse. I feel like I've heard that before. So you spoke with her this week. Is she remorseful or embarrassed? What can you tell us about the conversation that you had with her this week?
So it was obviously a private conversation. The clerk of the Privy Council and I spoke to her. We went over the report, or we talked about the findings of the report and how stark they were, how compelling were the conclusions of the review. That was the nature of the conversation. I don't pretend to know what was in her state of mind at a particular moment. We reviewed the seriousness of the report, and she then reflected, over the...
Sorry, I'm interrupting. I'm not asking you to analyze her state of mind. I'm wondering if she told you, this is a public figure. This is one of the most public figures in the land. So I'm wondering if she said, you know, I'm sorry, this is terrible, anything, you know, that showed some sort of, you know, remorse or realization that this was behavior that was unacceptable, especially for a governor general.
Yeah, no, that was not the nature of the conversation, Joyce, that I had with her. She reflected on the contents of the report and then the next day informed the prime minister of her intention to resign, which, as we know, she did yesterday. So that was, in our view, the assumption of responsibility for the workplace. But it also allowed the government to renew the leadership at Rideau Hall and to ensure that those employees feel that they have a safe and respectful workplace.
Well,
that's the minimum
they should expect. Absolutely. So let me get to that. So you are now going to replace her. So give me a timeline quickly. Are we talking weeks, months? How fast can you do this?
We're talking weeks, probably not months. We haven't turned our attention as a government to those details. The Privy Council office will, we assume, offer advice to the Prime Minister next week. She just resigned yesterday. But we don't think that having the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court occupy the constitutional function is something that can go on for months and months. So we need to find the best possible person to succeed her in an expeditious way. And I think the Privy Council will be offering advice to the government next week on how that can properly be done. But it's not something that we would drag on inordinately, because it's we recognize that the function needs to be fulfilled by a permanent occupant of that office.
I mean, clearly. So will any thought be given to giving this job to an Indigenous person, a racialized Canadian? Is that something that you would consider?
Well, we're always interested, and the Prime Minister talks to us often about this, about finding groups that have traditionally been excluded from appointments or from serving in different functions of the government or functions of state. So the diversity of the country should be celebrated in all of its faces in every government institution. But no, the Prime Minister, I don't think, as I say, the Governor General resigned yesterday. He will turn his attention to the process and the way to find the best possible person to succeed Madame Payette. But I think the record of our government is we're always looking to find qualified people from those communities to serve in every function of the government.
So I'm wondering if the selection process or the vetting process, as it's called, you know, was the Prime Minister defended it, but said, you know, it can always be strengthened. The opposition is saying, you know, maybe the opposition can have a say. Maybe members of the opposition or of all parties could be part of this committee. Are you considering that? Would you consider having a sort of more open selection process or a stricter selection process?
So, to be honest, Joyce, we haven't turned our attention to those issues at all. As I say, we're 24 hours after receiving her resignation, but the Privy Council will properly offer advice to the Prime Minister in terms of options of what would be the next steps in finding a replacement. We recognize that the replacement has to be somebody worthy of that office. And we're always looking at ways, as the Prime Minister said, to ensure that the vetting process is as robust and as complete as it should be. In this case, it was obviously a challenge.
You lived at Rideau Hall. Your father was Governor General. Just give us an example of what kind of person. We're told it has to be someone very diplomatic. The Governor General becomes everybody, you know, every Canadian's person. Your dad was a Governor General. What are you looking for? What person are you looking for to fulfill this job in a crisis? This is an economic crisis. It's a health crisis. You're a minority government. There's a budget. Your government could fall. That happens to minority governments. So who for this job? What kind of person will you need in this job, seeing how you think this job is an important one?
Of course, it's got to be somebody, Joyce, who is worthy of the confidence of Canadians. I remember my father 2.5 decades ago when he had that function. One of the things that he found the most fulfilling was the chance to celebrate the excellence of Canadians, to see the face of Canadians in all its forms in every part of the country. It was for him, and he'd been in active public life for many decades before that. It was a discovery of parts of the country and people in the country that he would have never otherwise have had an opportunity to meet. So it's somebody who should, in my view, embody the excellence of Canadians and the great stories of Canadians and of different parts of the country, different regions of the country, different backgrounds that Canadians have. The Prime Minister will be considering all of those factors. But as I say, I haven't been part of any conversation in terms of precisely what would be the next steps. It feels like something that we'll turn our attention to next week.
Dominique Leblanc, Intergovernmental Affairs Minister, thanks so much for sharing your thoughts with us, and have a lovely and safe weekend, sir.
Well, thank you. And you too, Joyce. Have a great evening.
Well, that's the government's perspective, light on details about what comes next. It's too soon, perhaps, but we're expected to hear more in the coming days about this damaging report and the selection process for the next governor general, seeing how this one that led to Payette's appointment was somewhat flawed. So let's bring in opposition reaction for this. NDP leader Jagmeet Singh joins us now. Welcome to Power Play, Mr. Singh. Nice to see you. I just want to get your initial thoughts about it. I know that Monsieur Leblanc did not give us details on what kind of committee, if a committee was going to select the next a governor general, what process they were preferring. But how should it be, this next selection process? And who should be on that committee that vets and recommends candidates, high-profile candidates, to the Prime Minister and his office?
Well, first of all, it's really nice to see you as well, and Happy New Year to you and your family. I hope everyone's safe. This is something very important. I do want to stress the fact that for me, my priority is going to be fighting for improved paid sick leave so workers can stay home when they're sick, making sure seniors are protected, and making sure we're doing everything possible to get everyone vaccinated. But when it comes to the selection process of not just the Governor General, but of government-appointed positions like commissioners, we've seen that the current procedures, the way that the federal government operates, is not at the highest level. In fact, in many cases, the federal government whoever's in majority can just appoint who they want. There are other ways to do it. I was in provincial legislature where all official parties had to be on the selection committee. It was a unanimous decision when we chose commissioners. That type of process is far better than what we have at the federal level right now. So something like that creates a more just, a fair appointment system where we are all involved, where there is greater scrutiny, is something we should certainly look at in all cases where we're appointing important positions.
You talk about, you know, fighting for Canadians and fighting for paid sick leave for those, you know, 2 weeks of paid sick leaves. But we know that Julie Payette will get perks. She'll get an annuity. She has an expense account. Should she? Do you think that she should still get these perks and these annuities, despite the fact that, you know, this sort of ended this way and her tenure wasn't very glorious?
Well, I think really it comes down to the treatment of workers. And I think what doesn't sit well with Canadians is that after a report that was very clearly damning in terms of the treatment, the harassment, the abuse that workers endured under her leadership, that type of behavior should not be rewarded. I think that is something that doesn't sit well with Canadians. They raise that as a concern, and I share that concern. So if there is a way to ensure that there is that this behavior is not rewarded, that there is a way to stop that remuneration, we as New Democrats would be open to looking at that.
I'm wondering, you know, she spent 3 years, she really didn't do the same things that her predecessors did. You know, she was not very present. She did not want to fulfill the duties that usually a governor general fulfills. Not all of them, a few of them. So I'm wondering what does this mean for the future of this role? Does it bring into question the significance of this role in the 21st century? And should we really still have a Queen's representative in Canada?
I think those are really fair questions. And I think those are questions we should absolutely take a hard look and answer. I think the problem that we're up against, though, is that we are faced with a pandemic. And right now, our priority should be on helping and protecting Canadians. These are very valid questions, though, and I think there will be a time for us to answer them. And I think we should always be taking a hard look at our democracy and making sure it functions the best way possible, that every part of it is working at its best and achieving the goals we want to set. So I think those are fair questions. I just think that right now, with the pandemic, our priority has to be on protecting Canadians with vaccines and seniors and long-term care and making sure paid sick leave is there.
Yes. We should put it on our list of things we should debate after the pandemic. I totally agree with you, Jagmeet Singh. Thanks so much for taking these for sharing these thoughts with us, and happy and safe weekend to you and your family.
Thank you to you as well. Thank you.
And I'd like to bring in more opposition reaction now. We have the Conservatives' House Leader here, Gérard Deltel. Monsieur Deltel, welcome to Power Play. Nice to see you, sir. It's been quite a while. I'm wondering, you probably heard the Intergovernmental Affairs Minister. There will be a selection process. The government doesn't know yet what kind of selection vetting process will be. Do you think that the opposition parties, all parties, should be part of this process?
Well, our leader, Erin O'Toole, stated today that, yes, we would like to be informed of the decision of the Prime Minister before making it. But first and foremost, just reset the committee that we have created in 2012. This is my advice I have to the government. Say, hey, you guys, you just have to do what we have done in 2012. In 2012, when we were in office, we created a committee, independent one, to have a good job to scrutinize NVNA candidacies and to propose candidacies to the Prime Minister. And at the end of the day, the one who called the shot obviously recognized that. But what did Mr. Trudeau do with that situation? Because he think, and unfortunately this is the reality in so many issues, he think that he's better than everyone. He put aside the committee. He think that I am the Prime Minister, I know what is good for everybody. And then he appointed someone who was not fit for the job. And it's sad for those who worked with her for the last 3 years and to suffer the toxic climate. It's also sad for Madame Payette herself, because she was not fit for the job. But the Prime Minister thinks, because Justin Trudeau is Justin Trudeau, he thinks that he's better than everyone. He should have done what we have created in 2012, a committee to make the recommendation, and also just to watch is the personality that they will be the choice of to be the good one, which with Madame Payette wasn't the case.
No, it seems that it wasn't the case indeed. And it's fair, we should underline that committee is the committee that selected and recommended David Johnson, who was in place for 7 years, a much beloved governor general. But I want to ask you this, Monsieur Deltel, because I'm curious. You know, we are both from Quebec. We know Madame Payette is a very well-known figure. When she was selected, Were you wowed? Were you impressed with the choice? Did you think, because her resume is so impressive, she seemed to have all the qualities and the background for a job like this. Were you impressed at the time? Did you think, hey, wow, this is a good selection? Or did you know, from what we know in Quebec, that perhaps in her past she had incidents where she had been a little bit too aggressive with employees?
Well, as a Canadian, I thought that the Prime Minister would have done his own work just to be sure that she could fit to the job. But unfortunately, she does not fit for the job. And you know, this is sad to see that how fantastic this woman was just before that job, how impressive she was as a role model, she was as inspiration she was for young women who want to have a scientific career. She was a really good example for everybody. She was a great Canadian. But now, thanks to Justin Trudeau's misjudgment and misattitude with this issue, now she is an embarrassment. And that is sad for her, and that is sad for Canada. Instead of addressing some serious issue, you know, like vaccination, your economy, like recovery of economy, this is where we stand as conservative. Well, we have to address the bad judgment of Justin Trudeau again.
Gérard Deltel, a conservative House leader, thank you so much for this, and have yourself a great weekend.
You too, Madame Napier. Thank you to talk to you.
And we'd love to hear your thoughts on today's show and your leaders here in Ottawa. Please reach out through social media on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and email. And coming up, the race against time. Can we afford more vaccine delays? And should international travel be banned to conceal variant surge? CTV News infectious disease specialist Dr. Abdou Sherkawi joins us next. Stay with Power Play.
The next few weeks will be challenging when it comes to deliveries. That said, Dr. Bourla assured me that hundreds of thousands of Pfizer doses will be delivered the week of February 15th and in the weeks to follow. He also confirmed that we will receive all of our 4 million doses from Pfizer before March 31st. The current momentary delay is so that they can increase their production overall going forward.
And welcome back. Facing a pressure campaign to get vaccines rolling again, Prime Minister Justin Trudeau bypassed his cabinet and went straight to Pfizer's CEO seeking assurance that Canada would indeed get doses next month. It comes amid news Canada won't receive a single Pfizer shipment next week. Trudeau said the company still promises to meet its delivery target of 4 million doses by the end of March. What's the plan B if more unexpected scheduling hiccups arise, and how do we put a lid on the surging variant cases found on Canadian soil? CTV News infectious disease specialist Dr. Abdou Sherkawi joins me now from Toronto to discuss. Dr. Sherkawi, as usual, nice to see you, and we've got so many questions for you, but I want to ask you about the vaccine delays. It's 1 week, but not really. It may be a little bit more than that in the end. How devastating is this on the ground?
Well, let's not quibble about this. Any day that we don't have a steady supply of vaccines is lives that are being lost, particularly in long-term care facilities and places that house our most vulnerable Canadians who have suffered the most throughout this pandemic. So we can't sugarcoat that. On the other hand, we're in a pretty good place overall. I don't think many people would have bet that we would have had one, let alone more than one vaccine even available at this juncture of the pandemic. This is going to be a temporary setback. And while we're waiting for more vaccines to arrive, we're going to have to ration our supplies. We're going to have to triage things to the highest risk targets, and that's going to be people living in long-term care and those support workers who are taking care of them. And the rest of us are going to have to make do. And that's a difficult thing to wrap our heads around, but it's not impossible. If we look around the world and look at places that have very successfully controlled this pandemic, most of them have done it in the pre-vaccine era. We can argue that Australia and New Zealand are islands and it was easier to restrict travel. But there are lots of other countries around Southeastern Asia and places even like Uruguay that are not very similar in terms of their economies or their infrastructure. But they did it, and they did it through strict public health adherence and through good messaging. And we have to start taking a page out of that playbook right now and trying to make up for lost time and getting our bridge towards probably the next few weeks when we're going to be getting more ammunition to get more vaccines into arms, and that can be done.
So when you're talking about tightening restrictions here, and that's a debate. Is that what you would recommend like not only tightening restrictions, like a shutdown, like a serious, curfews. Is that what we're talking about? Because next week we won't be getting vaccines. This may occur again. We don't produce our vaccines. We are at the mercy of others in order to get the vaccines into Canada. So we have to kind of expect the unexpected. So while we wait, should there be a countrywide shutdown or shutdowns that are a lot more strict than the ones that are in place now?
No, I don't think that that's the solution. I think what we're going through right now is quite difficult for many people, including, of course, schools being closed, which has a really enormous effect throughout the community, both in terms of people who are tenuously employed and the social and emotional state of our children and our families. So I don't think that tightening restrictions further is going to help. I think what we now need to do is to become a bit more proactive. Let's try and develop some rapid testing infrastructure strategies that are going to help allow us to open up schools in a safe manner and to open up our economy. I think if we want to look at where we want to identify new areas for restrictions, I do think we're going to have to look at travel restrictions. We're going to have to look a lot more carefully at global travel, particularly knowing what we now know about South Africa and Brazil. Those variants look just as transmissible as the British variant, but potentially more serious in terms of their lethality. So as much as we don't want to impugn the travel industry and we want to allow trade and finance to occur through travel being unhindered, that's something that I think we definitely need to look at very, very seriously. And it can't really be delayed much further. Sure.
Yes, and the Prime Minister mentioned that today about, sort of canceling the spring break. Dr. Abdu Sharkawi, thanks so much for this. It was good to see you and good to hear the advice.
Thank you. Stay safe.
And here's some other news you need to know. U.S. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer says he's been notified by House Speaker Nancy Pelosi that the articles of impeachment will be delivered to the Senate on Monday.
The fact is, the House will deliver the article of impeachment to the Senate. The Senate will conduct a trial of the impeachment of Donald Trump. It will be a full trial. It will be a fair trial.
The trial could begin as early as next week, Schumer says. Senators will have to decide whether former President Donald Trump incited the insurrection against the United States. A conviction during the impeachment trial requires a two-thirds majority. And today marks 774 days since Canadians Michael Kovrig and Michael Spavor have been detained in a Chinese jail. The former diplomat and entrepreneur were arrested in China on allegations of state spying on December 2018, widely seen as retaliation for the detention of Huawei CFO Meng Wanzhou in Vancouver days prior. On Thursday, Canadian officials received virtual consular access to Michael Kovrig. The government says they remain committed to securing both men's freedom. And coming up, Julie Payette's unparalleled exit.
Frankly, the fact that you need to be told not to yell and swear and drive people to tears is ludicrous to begin with. You should know that you don't conduct yourself that way.
Were the Liberals blinded by star power, and should Ottawa bring back the Stephen Harper Committee to select Governors General? Our strategy session weighs in. Stay with Power Play. We'll be back in a few minutes.
For all high-level appointments, there is a rigorous vetting process that was followed in this case. Obviously, we will continue to look at that vetting process to ensure that it is the best possible process as we move forward.
And welcome back. Prime Minister Justin Trudeau is cleaning up the mess from Julie Payette's retreat from Rideau Hall. The PM hasn't named Madame Payette's formal replacement, obviously, but all eyes will be on the process used to name our nation's next governor general. How does Payette's tenure and resignation impact the role of the governor general in Canada? Let's bring in our strategist to weigh in on this. Our Liberal commentator is Greg McCochrane. Conservative strategist Vivek Prabowo is with us. Anne McGrath is the NDP's national director. And Greg Weston is our neutral Switzerland. Hello to the four of you. It's nice to see you. And you know what? I want to start with you. And I'm wondering if in, you know, in the next process, whenever that may happen, should the government bring in the opposition for consultation in this process?
Well, I mean, I wouldn't object to that. I think they should have some kind of process. I mean, in the past, there have been panels and those kinds of things, but it doesn't seem like there was any real process that was followed here. I mean, I think this goes to a bit of a pattern of behavior of the government and particularly the Prime Minister making big, splashy, kind of feel-good announcements without doing the background work or even doing any of the follow-up work. So, you know, I mean, I think that this all does lie at his feet right now, because these questions about vetting that are coming out in the last few days, they're not new. They were asked at the time. And information came out very quickly that there were issues around her appointment. And I think that rather than do these big kind of, you know, sort of pseudo progressive announcements, that the work has to go in and people have to have faith in the process. And the more the process can be kind of cross-partisan and or even independent, the better the results will be.
Greg McCochrane, I want to ask you, did the Liberals fail in this vetting process? I mean, they did not use the committee that the Conservatives had set up to, you know, that eventually led to the appointment of David Johnston, much beloved, 7 years in the job, did a great job. So did the Liberals fail in this process?
Did they fail? I don't know. The events of this week seem to have gone really well for them. Yeah, it's a big fail. It's a huge embarrassment. You know, only 29 people since Confederation have had this job. And for some reason, the last occupant didn't seem to know how it worked. That seems like an incredible error. I mean, I get it. NASA, you know, trusted her with, I think, space shuttles worth $3.5 billion. You know, one wonders, you know, what happened between then and now. But I think it is a huge problem. And it does speak, you know, I watched you last night, Joyce, in your interview with Lisa LaFlamme. You said that the governor general looked good on paper. And I think that's the big problem. I also think in the early days of administrations, sometimes you get caught up in your own rhetoric and projections. And it's almost like you're casting, if you get my intention there, as opposed to appointing. So, yeah, I think it was. Can you imagine having to call Her Majesty and say that the appointment you recommended to her wasn't working out? You know, this is somebody who sat across from every British prime minister since Winston Churchill, and you're left explaining what happened with what went wrong about vetting in a week when your opposition was kicking out a very, significant person, a leadership candidate in the form of Derek Sloan. No one's talking about that. Everyone's talking about the governor general.
Yeah, good for the Conservatives. But I want to ask Greg Weston this. So for 3.5 years, she wasn't, you know, our most effective governor general. She canceled a lot of the things governor generals usually do. I know that there was a pandemic, but just the same. You know, she was a little bit of an absentee. I mean, she did not even live in, she didn't live in Ottawa, let alone at Rideau Hall. So my question is, so if for 3.5 years we lived basically with an absentee governor general, nothing happened, the government and our constitution is still healthy, the government is still running despite the pandemic. So are we, do we still in the 21st century need such a role in Canada, or should we just move on now?
Well, if you're a royalist, you will say we should keep the governor general. And if you're not, this will surely entrench feelings of many Canadians that the whole role of the governor general has become a bit of an anachronism. Look, if we gauge whether we should have a governor general strictly by what they did and who they are, I think we would have heaved it a long time ago. Let's remember, Julie Payette is not the first person who's come along who has fallen out of grace. Jean Sauvé made herself wildly unpopular by becoming governor general. Adrienne Clarkson wasn't exactly the darling of Rideau Hall either by the time she left. So I don't think that whether we should have a governor general or not, it depends on who the occupant is. It's really more, we look at what is our constitutional role in government. We could have a Republican. We could have a Republican just like the United States. Then we could elect someone like Donald Trump.
Well, no, that doesn't mean we would elect someone like Donald Trump if we had a republic. I hope we'd have more sense than that. But Vivek Prabhu, I want to ask you about this process, because your government, or the Conservative government, had set up in 2012, we heard Gérald Deltel tell us that, a committee that selected probably one of the most beloved governor generals. So should you and other parties, should the Conservatives and all parties be a part of this, and how does a vetting process work? I mean, it's such a strange role, really, because it is, it's constitutional, but only at big intervals. So should this be a more, a bigger process and a more open process?
I think so. I mean, I think that this process, in terms of who we're appointing here, I think we're appointing someone that's ideally above politics, somebody who represents Canada. And I think the best that we can do is apply a kind of transparency, at least show who is on this committee to vet, make sure it's a nonpartisan committee. I think also including having an element of the opposition being involved in some way in the process would be helpful. I think that's what Canadians probably have noticed from this debacle, is that it was quite opaque. And it appears as though decisions were made behind closed doors on this. And they would have liked to know what went into the choice in the first place. I mean, this is one of those situations where I believe it's an unforced error. I think that clearly she was not suited for the role. Instead of discussing other things like vaccines, as well as Keystone XL and U.S.-Canada relations, we're talking about this right now. I think this is part of what happens when you don't make the right decisions. And sometimes the consequences happen years later.
Vivek, it's time for a Nova Scotian in the role, I think. Would you back me?
I'm all about having Nova Scotians in high places, absolutely.
Okay, but we have to go to it. You guys are not part of the selection process. Sorry, you're not on the committee. But I have to take a break right now. So coming up, going to battle with the U.S. over Keystone XL. The premiers are ready for it, but are the feds? Our strategy panel returns next to weigh in.
This would not be starting a trade war. It would be responding to one that began yesterday in the United States. This is existing infrastructure. It's about a presidential permit for a piece of infrastructure that crosses the border that was installed last summer in a project co-owned by a Canadian government.
Well, that was Alberta Premier Jason Kenney accusing the U.S. of igniting a trade war with Canada after scrapping the Keystone XL pipeline permit. So Kenney is proposing sanctions against the Biden administration for their decision. And we know Alberta has poured about $1.5 billion of taxpayer money into this project. He has given very little indication of what those sanctions would look like. And it was discussed last night on the Prime Minister's call with premiers. And it's expected to be obviously on the agenda during Justin Trudeau's call with President Joe Biden, which started at the top of the hour. If we have any details, we will bring them to you. So how should Canada approach its first feud with the new commander-in-chief? Let's bring back our strategist to weigh in. Our Liberal commentator is Greg McCachran, Conservative strategist Vivek Prabhu. Anne McGrath is the NDP's national director, and the always neutral Greg Weston. Anne, let me start with you, because I sense that perhaps you think that the scrapping on a strictly green point of view is not a bad thing.
Well, I mean, you know, as an Albertan, I have to say that there are very few people in Alberta that don't recognize the importance of the oil and gas sector to the economy in Alberta. But also, most Albertans recognize that there will need to be a transition away from fossil fuels and towards a greener and cleaner future. So, and recognize the importance of economic diversification. I mean, people, young people in Alberta are raised on the idea of economic diversification. What happened here is, first of all, it was no surprise that Joe Biden was going to cancel that project. And it looks like what Jason Kenney did, and what I think Albertans will be upset about, is that he took $1.5 billion of their money and placed a bet on President Trump being reelected. And I think that that was very, very foolhardy on his part. I think that what Albertans are looking for is some support for the oil and gas sector that will help workers make the move towards greener and cleaner tech, towards renewables, the cleanup of the orphaned and abandoned wells, all of those kinds of things. So I think that Albertans are not going to be very happy with Premier Kenney's actions on this. He's pouring millions of dollars into a so-called war room that is an absolute laughingstock, spending money on this, and now threatening sanctions against the United States, rather than looking at how he can support workers in their communities and their families in making a move towards a different kind of energy mix.
Vivek Prabhu, I'm wondering, when I heard him say that, I like my jaw dropped. I thought, really, a trade war with the Americans just off the bat, just like that? Was it just him, you know, blowing steam here, you know, just venting because he was very angry? He can't be meaning that for real.
Look, I understand, and I think a lot of people understand where this frustration comes from. I think Alberta is obviously facing not just one, but multiple crises. I would say that for him, it wasn't just an investment alone. I think that was a backing. It was a Team Canada type of investment. I think I think it's evident that at least before, the Trudeau Liberals were also in support of this pipeline, and that investment was made with some regulatory certainty, at least when they had poured in that investment. I think the premier was surprised to see the prime minister capitulate so quickly. And for someone who is captain of Team Canada, I think it was very disappointing in that way. I'm not surprised. Somebody needs to make sure that those voices are heard. What I hope, and I liked what Michael Chong said today about going back to the table and advocating for a North American energy strategy that involves a Keystone XL that is produced with Canadian oil of the highest environmental standards.
So, Greg McCachran, did the Prime Minister give up too easily? I mean, we heard the ambassador the other day saying for weeks, for months, we have been with Alberta, Canada, Alberta, and, you know, trying to talk to Biden's people, trying to explain that this was a clean pipeline, so to speak. So did the Prime Minister give up too fast? Because we heard his new foreign affairs minister saying, hey, we accept that decision. So should Canada, and does Canada even have arguments to change the mind of this administration?
I'm not going to fault anyone for accepting reality. You know, in prep for the panel today, I pulled an article out from July about Jason Kenney, the $1.5 billion just on the Keystone that Anne mentioned. And clearly in the article, you know, Biden wins, this will not be going ahead. Was Jason Kenney the last to know? I don't have Anne's Alberta roots. I do have family in Alberta. So I, you know, kind of look at what columnists and people that have been usually big backers of Premier Kenney are no longer. He's had a number of setbacks in terms of, you know, we've talked ad nauseum about the politicians who travel. But let's just take a look. In November, Joyce, we talked about the new legislation that Wilkinson and the Prime Minister were bringing in around greenhouse gases. We last week had really good news in the Oshawa area for electric vehicles. But what is, in terms of the environment, the other story for Jason Kenney was giving out coal leases that his own people, the people of Alberta, have done such an outcry on this, they've had to rescind these coal leases. Who sounds more like Donald Trump? Someone talking about electric vehicles or somebody talking about coal? I don't think Premier Kenney read the room.
Yeah. I want to give Greg Weston a chance here. So this is the beginning of a new relationship. It's supposed to be a nicer one. Is this a real setback, or did Canada really know this was coming down anyway?
Well, it's a real setback. It's going to be a huge economic loss, certainly for Alberta and the West. But, let's face it, when our prime minister goes in and sits down with Joe Biden, which he's doing right now, there are probably a dozen major issues between the two countries sitting in front of him. And so the question is, do you go in and you say, either fix the pipeline or we're not going to talk about anything else? It's not really the best approach to this. There's probably a 1% chance at the moment that this will come back. Who knows? A court, these things become endless court cases. A court may turn around and say what Biden has done is unconstitutional. People may get sick of the idea of all those trains carrying oil south to the... So it's not dead yet, but you don't go into your first day with your new neighbor and say, we're going to be enemies.
And repeat... Exactly, and repeat the sort of poison relationship that happened under Barack Obama and Stephen Harper. I'm going to have to leave it there. Our strats, I wish you all a fantastic weekend, and we will see you all next Friday. And that's your Power Play Day in Politics. Thank you for being with us.